listening to the Get the Pancake podcast, helping volleyball coaches have their best season yet.
Hi, coaches. This is Whitney from the Get the Pancake podcast, a podcast for volleyball coaches. I am really looking forward to this week's episode because I've got two fellow volleyball podcasters on the show. Annie Deloitte and Matt Stolz are the masterminds behind the volleyball podcast, The Sideline. The Sideline is a podcast for volleyball coaches by volleyball coaches, and through interviews, they give an inside look into life as collegiate volleyball assistant coaches, or at least that's what they set out to do, but I know you guys have now had a couple of head coaches as well, so we can talk about your podcast a little bit later in the episode, but first, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to be on.
Of course. So we've got a lot of great topics to cover today, including recruiting and keeping stats and what players are lacking when they get to college. But before we dive into the episode, I'd love to have you both take a minute or two to introduce yourself. So Annie, no pressure, but let's start with you.
So my name is Annie Deloitte. I am currently the assistant women's volleyball coach at Stevens. We are a D3 school in Hoboken, New Jersey, right outside of Manhattan. Super fun. My story started back in 2012 when I started volleyball and school at Framingham State University in Framingham, Massachusetts. From there, I actually coached every year of college for club, and I just fell in love with it completely. If I could have majored in coaching, which I know is a major now, but I didn't know back then, I definitely would have done it. 1 year out of school, I was, you know, a JV coach, continued coaching club, and then decided that I really needed to make coaching my full-time job. So that's when I contacted my college coach, and he was super helpful and, you know, told me, you know, you got to go be a GA. And I was like, what's a GA? I had no idea. So from there, I got the GA position at Averett University, which is where Matt and I met. And I did two seasons with the Cougars, and we were down in Danville, which I had never heard of before, Southern Virginia. And, you know, from there, I once again just knew that I had to continue this as a full-time career. And in December of 2018, I applied to be the assistant at Stevens, and then I got the job.
So that's Stevens, what is it?
Institute of Technology.
Okay, so Stevens Institute of Technology. And then Matt, why don't you tell us about yourself now?
I kind of grew up always playing men's volleyball. Depending on where you are located in the country, isn't always super accessible. Thankfully, I was raised in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is a hotbed, really, especially nowadays. It's really growing. And super fortunate, was able to play as a young kid and grew up kind of always knowing I wanted to get into coaching. I was never the greatest. By any means, I'll be the first one to say that, but I always enjoyed the competitive side and getting better. And so I wound up playing Division III ball at Lakeland, now university. Back then it was college, which is in Wisconsin. Wanted to stay close to home, you know, felt comfortable there. And really, that's kind of where I fell in love with coaching. I started coaching a high school team there and for girls JV and helped with the varsity and knew that I wanted to follow that career path. And so, again, Annie touched upon it. Moved out to Virginia, did that. Was there for two seasons just with Annie. And I was enamored with college volleyball. You know, I was in love with it from first time I really was a part of it. And I remember I would go home at night after watching film, even at Averett. And my girlfriend and I would watch, and Annie too, would watch, you know, Big Ten volleyball, Pac-12 volleyball, you know, just any volleyball we could find. And I was like, man, I just want to be a part of really high level volleyball. And I wanted to push the boundaries of what I could possibly do. And thankfully, I was fortunate enough to join the staff at Marquette, who was coming off a Sweet 16 berth and, you know, was able to work with an incredible coaching staff and really experience what Division I volleyball was. And, you know, not just Division I volleyball, but volleyball at really the highest level. And so that was something that just made me fall in love even more and was fortunate enough to be there for 1 year. And, you know, before quarantine kind of all happened, I was fortunate enough to kind of join the staff at SEMO down in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. And I've been here ever since and, you know, loving being a part of college coaching.
So It sounds like we all have a really intense passion for coaching. I'm curious, like, kind of what is something that you really just love about coaching? Because it's really easy to say, I love coaching, but what about it is it that draws you to that as a career?
I think it's fun to be able to have a passion for something first off. I was always told from a young age from my parents and everyone I looked up to is like, find something you're really passionate about that you enjoy doing every day. And so when I was looking for something that I was really passionate about, like, there was no doubt in my mind that it was volleyball. Like, there is no way anything else could do it. So it was, how can I make this sustainable? Whether it was playing, coaching, being a club director, doing something that could pay the bills, obviously, right? But something that just truly I enjoyed. And so why I enjoy it as a career is when you can see someone that has been dealing with something in their lives and you can help them through that, whether it be volleyball related, school related, family related, whatever it is, I think that's something I truly enjoy. That's a passion of mine. And then same thing goes on the court. You know, let's say someone's really struggling with the skill and that aha moment or that light bulb goes off. Like, I don't know as a coach that there's much better. I know when I was 18 years old, I was, you know, immature and I needed people to be there for me to teach me, you know, how to become an adult. And through the sport of volleyball, I think I had some great mentors through that. And, you know, if I can, you know, help one kid a year, two kids a year, whatever it might be, I think that's my ultimate goal. And truly, I don't know that you can beat that.
Yeah, I would totally agree with Matt. I would say I grew up and I had no idea what I wanted to do with my future. Like, it was just a common theme in my life. I'm like, I just have no idea. Some people know, some people don't. And volleyball was always the constant, I think, throughout everything. So by the time I got to college, I knew I wanted to play. I wasn't the most incredible player ever. I went to a state school, had a pretty decent career, but I would definitely say, I actually think Amy Pauly might have said this on our podcast that we just put out. It was, I was definitely an athlete student is how she put it, which I thought was hilarious. So I was the same way, obviously at a much lower level. She played at Alabama. So that was kind of my mentality, was like, I'm just going to go play volleyball and have fun. So I ended up majoring in business, and I chose business because I knew I could graduate in 4 years with it. I was like, I don't really have a passion for anything else. Like I said, if coaching was a major, I would have 100% like hopped on that right away without even really knowing that I loved coaching. Cause like I said, I didn't really get into the coaching side of things until, I guess it was like November of my freshman year of college. So that was kind of something that really just hit a light bulb, like a light bulb moment went off for me once I finished school, because I got a full-time job sitting behind a desk and I was miserable. Like, I will tell everyone to this day, that was just not meant to be. So that's kind of when I was like, I would coach volleyball for free. Like, just let me go do volleyball and just do that for my entire life. And, you know, obviously, like I said, I reached out to my head coach at the time, or my previous head coach. And he was like, well, you can do that. You know that, right? So I think just for me, realizing the fact that what was there, what I was looking for the entire time was right in front of me, which is kind of cliche and funny to say, but it's definitely the truth. Like, I, like Matt said, I love when the kids have a moment where they're just excited about something. And, you know, that sort of passion that you have as a coach just is, I think, irreplaceable.
So I definitely have a love, I call it the click moment. So it's the same thing as the light bulb or whatever you want to call it. It's just when you are working with someone so much on something that means so much to them, and then it finally just clicks and they're able to execute, you know, a great attack or get their serve over the net for the first time. That is 100% why I love coaching. And I think both of you brought up something that maybe we can get to it a little bit later on, but a lot of people, especially young athletes, don't realize that volleyball and related avenues, I guess, are a viable career path. And for the parents that are listening, for coaches that are listening, if you have players who are really, really invested in volleyball and they can't really see beyond that, maybe coaching is a great option for them, or maybe working in an athletic department being a director of volleyball operations. That could be something they could do as well. So all the parents who are listening and coaches, talk to your athletes if they're very passionate about volleyball and talk to them about how it is a career path. And that's something that your guys's podcast touches on. Well, I guess that's basically what it is all about, is the journey that coaches take to becoming coaches. So I'm going to recommend your podcast anyway, but I'll just give it a shout out now. Let's get into more of this discussion. I have so many topics that I want to go over with you guys and hear your opinions on. So the number one thing that I always wonder, because I coach at the 14 and under, that sort of level, when players progress through high school and they're going to college, what's something that you see players lacking in? What is it that at the younger levels we're not preparing our players for at the college level?
Yeah, I think that's an awesome question. And my answer to that is 100% maturity and the mental side of the game. So for me, I coach 17s. So that is the year that I always say, I want more from them. They come in from being 16s and they're, you know, our club I think is great. We do a good job developing them technically, but something that's always missing is, you know, how do you teach those kids to motivate their team and dig deep when they're playing a team that maybe is statistically better than them, or maybe they're the ones that are like expected to fail and expected to lose. Other things like, how do you teach a kid to dig deep and react to when their team is down 24-23 and they're up to serve? You know, I think those sort of situations, it's really tough to teach, but that like mental side of the game, I think is huge. And I know, you know, I'm super excited for this year with my 17s because I feel like this group in particular, they're just so motivated internally and externally that I feel like that's going to be like the easiest part for me, which usually it's so challenging. Like having those 17s, you're like, oh gosh, like there's so much drama, or a kid is on the bench and she's crossing her arms. Like, how do I prevent that? How do I get those kids to understand role playing, or understand that when they're in practice, they're fighting as hard as they need to be fighting to earn that spot on the court? And I think a lot of times when you're 14s, 15s, sometimes 16s, you're on the court and you're getting like equal playing time, or maybe there's only 10 kids or something and you're able to kind of all get in. Once you guys get older and once you're able to, you know, kind of have to fight, like how are you going to react when things are hard rather than being so easy all the time? I think that's kind of my biggest thing. And I love when freshmen come in and they're not making these like quote unquote freshman mistakes, because I feel like we kind of fall back on that and we really will be like, oh, well, she's just a freshman, like just allow it to happen. But it's those kids that come in that don't want to do that and don't want to be blamed on the last point or something. They want the last ball. They're like, no, no, no. Like I don't care that I'm a freshman. I'm getting this final ball. I think that's really huge. And that's kind of how you can develop, you know, leadership from a super early age. I think if you come in as a freshman with a leadership mentality and not just kind of accepting that you're the young one on the team.
Is there something that you think coaches can do to sort of instill that in their athletes, or a certain way to talk to their athletes to get them? Because I'm thinking back to when I was 16 and basically whatever was in front of me, that's where my focus was. And it was really hard to think kind of big picture beyond that. So how would you recommend coaches work with their athletes on that aspect of the game?
Yeah, I think a big thing is accountability. So I think as coaches, we shouldn't be so, I don't want to say easy on the athletes, because that's not really the word I'm going for. But if a kid is coming off the net, they're transitioning, they're making every single small move, and they're working as hard as they can. And then a kid comes in and like shanks a free ball, or she's not paying attention, or she's not talking. And then the kid who, you know, is working her butt off is kind of turned to the kid like, hey, let's go. I think sometimes like the other girl would be like, coach, she yelled at me, like, oh my gosh. And I think as coaches, we have to be like, no, no, like she's right. You know, she's doing all the right things and she's holding you accountable. So what are you going to do about it?
I love that. Thank you so much, Annie. Matt, do you have any thoughts on the topic?
Yeah, I think Annie and you, Whitney, both said some really good things. And I think I would echo what Annie said on the psychological aspect. I think she hit home a lot of really good points. I'll kind of add some stuff based on technical. I think for high school coaches or club coaches, it's a big change. Obviously, no matter what level it is, Division One, Two, Three, NAIA, it doesn't matter. Usually, if not drastically, it's a change in the speed of the game. It's hard to replicate. It really is hard to replicate unless you have, you know, six Division One kids, Division Two. Like it's hard to make someone that is playing volleyball potentially as their second sport. Maybe they're a soccer player, right? And they're just on the volleyball team. And it's hard for them to replicate a really good setter, right? That of you're trying to like prepare for another team. It's really hard. And so, you know, the speed of the game is one of the biggest things that I always will talk to freshmen about. Like, hey, Andy brought it up as like, you know, that's the freshman mistake. It's been interesting talking with some of my freshmen this year about some of the stuff that they'll make mistakes in practice. And it's like, hey, you know, you were able to get away with that for years, but welcome to kind of like the bigger leagues where girls are a lot faster, a lot stronger. It's not going to work. So on the technical level, just, you know, it's a faster game. And for me, I think that I can coach really well on a lot of aspects with offense and different stuff like that. I can teach you how to get a lot of kills a game, but I think blocking is one of the most underutilized and underpracticed skills in club and in high school in general. And I totally understand why. You know, girls are maybe not as physical, can't jump as high, maybe, you know, are shorter. And so blocking just kind of is pushed aside, right? You know, it's not used as offensive or defensive skill. And in all fairness, right, like you, if a team is averaging three blocks a set, that's unreal, right? Like you're a really amazing blocking team. And sometimes we tell our males, like, if you can get one block a set, great. And so for the time spent in club, you might only have 4 hours a week total to train. And so to spend 30 minutes on blocking doesn't really make sense. That's one skill that I would say is, you know, a big step up. You know, girls are just pounding the ball at our level and Annie's level too. It doesn't matter. Like they're just hitting so hard. And, you know, I think blocking is something that takes time. I think at our level, there's a true freshman that is starting and playing. Like she's darn good. You know, she is college ready. She's good. No matter if it's at our level or Annie's level, whatever it is. But that's one thing. And to add one more thing is I always tell my kids to take big swings. Don't be afraid of the moment. You know, like, the other day in practice, we had a girl, you know, was in a scramble situation and she decided to free ball the ball over. And I just had a kind of quick conversation about like, you know, in practice, like why, you know, I know you can free ball the ball over. I know I can see you set a ball 20 feet. I want to be able to see if you can swing at a ball coming from that angle, put pressure on the other team. So kind of like Annie said, put kids under more stress. You don't have to yell at, you don't have to be hard on them, but put them under stress and make them try and make a play. You know, I think that's the biggest thing that I would say.
I love that. Both of your guys' answers, just really holding them more accountable, sounds like it's going to be a huge benefit for a lot of coaches in terms of helping them kind of develop some ownership, some leadership skills. But you mentioned blocking and how a lot of players are sort of behind in blocking when they get to the college level. Is that something that coaches need to focus more on, or is that something that is just kind of well known that the college coaches are going to have a lot of work cut out for themselves when they get to that level?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know that I have an exact answer for it. I do think a lot of blocking comes down to understanding what is happening on the other side of the net, right? So, you know, you talked about how you're coaching a 14-year-old, and let's be real, unless you're coaching a 14-year-old that is going to be a power five kid, like it's hard to teach blocking because like they're just trying to get just a little over the net. But the thing that I often find myself teaching is not the actual mechanics of blocking, but it's understanding, you know, where is the pass coming from? Did the serve pull maybe that player out of a system where she's not hitting? What route is that opposing outside or middle taking that you think she's going to hit? Blocking is just, it's an art about seeing and processing information as quickly as possible. What I tend to tell my kids is take as much data into your brain quickly as possible, but try not to go too crazy. You don't want it to slow you down, but as coaches, I think we can do a better job of educating our kids from a young age about seeing what is happening on the other side instead of always just ball watching, right? Because we know that when a setter sets the ball, the hitter is trying to hit the ball. So I don't necessarily need to be watching ball the entire time. I know where the hitter is going to go. Hitter is always going to find the ball. So maybe I can see the hitter earlier and see what route she's running, what if she's in a bad spot where she has to tip the ball. I just think we can educate ourselves, you know, watching a lot of film, watching other teams play, just asking your athlete kind of, you know, what did you see in that situation? Did you think she was going to hit cross court? Did you think she was going to hit line? Did you see she was lying on the ground and you still thought she was going to get set? You know, it's stuff like that. And I approach it the same way how I'm kind of chatting about now and getting the athlete to see it for themselves. I think that really will be a benefit for their coming years and into college.
Well, and that's something that I've actually been thinking about in the last week or so. I do a lot of reading, and I was just reading about how our eyes are only designed to take in so much information. I don't know if you guys have seen the video where you're supposed to count how many times the basketball is passed around, and then there's a big distraction that goes through the middle that nobody ever sees because that's not where the attention is. And I'll include a link to that video in case anybody wants to go and watch it and test it for themselves. But it just really shows that wherever your attention is, that's what you see. And in the case of blocking or really just reading what's going on the other side of the court, if we don't know where to look, then we're not going to see what we need to see in order to make those decisions. So awesome. I love that. Thanks so much, Matt. Now, I want to talk about recruiting with you guys. How do you talk to athletes or their coaches or parents? And then is there anything that really stands out to you on the good side? And then are there any red flags during recruiting that you can share with the coaches and parents who are listening? Because they do talk to their players.
I think I have a unique perspective on this because in addition to being the 17s head coach, I'm also recently named the recruiting coordinator of the club. So it's a very different role. I'm able to, you know, work with mainly the 16s and 17s a little bit about, you know, with their process of recruiting. So I am kind of able to see like kind of that back end stuff that I wouldn't normally see as just a college recruiter. So something that I, you know, something that stands out to me, kind of switching gears, like just back to Stevens and recruiting from my school, I don't think is a very unique answer, but I definitely, you know, I like to go into a court and I like to see everything that's not just the skill based. I like to see the kid as a human, as a person, as, you know, not just as this big banger that's, you know, hitting the ball 10 foot. Obviously that's a huge plus. I'm not going to walk away from her court if she's doing that, but if she's doing that and then she's turning to her teammates and screaming in their faces, that is, like you said, Whitney, that's a pretty big red flag for me. You know, at the end of the day, we can teach the skills, and as long as the kid has like some sort of foundation of what they're doing and they're an awesome kid and, you know, just that kind of mentality, I think who wouldn't want somebody that's willing to learn and willing to adjust to your speed, like Matt was saying earlier, your level of the game. So, you know, that's kind of something there. On the flip side of it, something that I've been doing as a recruiting coordinator for my club is I'll have the kids, you know, all the student athletes that want to reach out to their coaches or to the, you know, to college coaches, I'll make sure 100% they're the first ones doing that. I will not be the one to reach out and just kind of throw my kids at people, which, you know, I'm not trying to diss on. It's just, I know personally as like a college coach, I like when I get the emails from the student athlete, not from the parents. That's a huge one, but you know, just from the kid first, I think is great. So what I've been doing is I'll make sure that my student athletes are reaching out first to schools that they want to go to or schools that they want to know more about. And I will send a follow-up email, maybe not the same day, maybe not even the same week, but at some point in the near future. And I will just talk about that kid as a person. And I won't even really talk about their volleyball skills. You know, I did it a couple times last year. I had, like I said, I had 17s last year. So I was able to send out a bunch of emails for some of my kids that, you know, you could be walking by in our court and maybe I have a libero that's shanked like three balls in a row and it's just not her day. She's having a bad day. Does that make her a bad volleyball player? No, it makes her, you know, a human that's just having an off set or an off, maybe an off 3 points. And those are the 3 points that the coach saw, which, you know, that happens a lot. So So I'll make sure as a recruiting coordinator to really follow up and talk about that kid as a person. Like I said, talk about their family. You're not just recruiting the kid, you're recruiting that entire family, which I don't know if coaches will agree or disagree with that, but I definitely think that's true. And I, you know, most of all, will just kind of attach my name to theirs if I feel like they're a kid that I want my name attached to. And I wouldn't do that, I think, as a college coach if I didn't actually believe in these kids. So that's kind of my recruiting spiel from both ends of my perspective.
When you're talking about the player sending that first email, what's in that email? Is it super long, super short? What are the contents in case anyone listening wants to send an email, but they don't know where to start?
Yeah, I think just making it as personal as possible is the main thing. Personal to the kid and also personal to the school. I think, you know, I think Matt might agree with me here. It's not so bad when we get kind of those mass emails that you can kind of tell are generated and sent to a lot of coaches, but it's also not my favorite personally. It's not a red flag by any means, but, and I'll still watch the film, I'll still look at the email, but there's nothing better than getting an email from a kid that's like, hey, so sorry about your loss in the Sweet 16 to Johns Hopkins. I loved watching that game. You know, my name is so-and-so. I'm from wherever. This is maybe my height. This is my GPA. You know, for our school, GPA is big, so they're going to have to include that. SAT scores, ACTs, anything like that. And then, of course, just like one or two little clips at the bottom of film. We don't need like every YouTube link on your entire page. That's kind of redundant. Most of us are pretty tech savvy. We can just click on and just figure out, you know, okay, this is this kid's recruiting page or their channel or whatever it is. So I think just adding like one thing at the bottom with film, I think film's a must though. It's kind of hard to create that relationship with a kid who just sends you a paragraph, and they could be the nicest kid in the world and maybe they could be really good at volleyball, but if there's no clip attached, we probably won't spend our time communicating back and forth until we figure out if they're even worth our time, not in a mean way, but you know, in a realistic way.
I love that. I think that's going to help a lot of players and also coaches just have that conversation with players about the recruiting process. So Matt, what's the recruiting process like for you? Is it pretty similar? Any big differences?
I'm just going to echo kind of what Annie said. I think Annie said it really well. I would agree with basically everything Annie said. I'm going to add maybe one or two things. When it comes to emails, personally, I prefer it if it's the subject line of your email is very direct about what it is. It should be like name, class, maybe GPA, depending on like any situation. Absolutely, you should put GPA and like maybe how tall you are and position. So I would say like put those directly, because I can't tell you how many emails I get per day. I will go through every single email and, you know, kind of look at, have we as a staff made comments about them in our recruiting service? Is this a new kid? What is her film? Different stuff. Who does she play for? Who do I know that might coach her? Who's in around the program? Maybe who's on her team? Stuff like that. And so I would just echo maybe on that. But Annie hit it home really well. Film is a must. If you don't put film, like, I especially nowadays, like with, you know, the uncertainty of college coaches being able to go recruit, film is must, without question. If you don't put film, you're not getting recruited. So I would just say that. My next thing I want to add is know the Division I, II, III NAIA different rules. I don't expect all club coaches and high school coaches, athletes, you guys should not know the rules. We should know the rules. So there are certain times where like dead periods are happening, right? So we can't go out and see you, but you know, we can get text messages, we can get phone calls, we can watch film. So kind of understand maybe what's going on a little, have a little bit of idea. We can't talk right now to anyone that is in the class of 2023 or later until June 15th of going into, what is it, their junior year. So kind of know that, like, you know, if someone is a sophomore right now, we might really, really like them, and we're just not responding based on the fact of we legally can't. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't stop contacting. Now, if we tell you no, then please stop contacting. I can't tell you how many times that I've told a kid no, maybe five times. It's wasting your time. It's wasting our time, you know, kind of get the vibe on that. So that's what I would say a lot with the mass emails. But yeah, I think Annie hit it home. When it comes to on-court recruiting, like at a tournament, I tend to look for kids that have been communicating with us. That's a big thing is, you know, I've watched film on them. I kind of know what I'm expecting. I've charted out kind of when I'm going to go watch them play. Annie said it really well. You know, sometimes we might only see a really bad set, and that's kind of what happens. You know, we're at a national qualifier where we got to watch 300 kids, whatever it might be. I don't know if that's a good number or not, but we might only get one set. And that's not to put pressure on the coaches to make sure they're always in, or pressure on the athletes to always be performing your best, but that's just kind of how it is, unfortunately. You know, I think when you can put not maybe a highlight, but also like full game film for us to watch so we can see you at your best, I think that's really important. Make sure if you send a full length kind of set or whatever, try and timestamp it for us when you touch the ball. I can't tell you how many times I've asked for a full set and someone does that, sends a full match, but now I'm there watching an hour, 20 minutes, and you might only touch the ball 12 times or whatever it is, but like, try and give me that. You know what I mean? That really helps us. We have a long job every day of recruiting, you know, planning practice, watching film. And unfortunately, I love to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I tend to do so, but like, I do need some sleep once in a while. So just do your best. And Annie is a really good person for like recruiting, I think, because she understands it on both ways. So she gets it. Like Annie and I talk recruiting strategy all the time about, you know, like how we communicate to someone or what we're looking for. And I think, you know, for college coaches, we want to get to know your players. We want to get to know you. We want to know your club directors. We want to get to know everyone involved with this kid. Annie said it really well, is like, we're not only recruiting the kid, we're recruiting a family, we're recruiting a club. For club directors out there listening, please don't sell us bad kids, right? Because our jobs are on the line. And if we get someone that just doesn't work out, we're not really likely to come back to you. That's a big thing. And obviously, if you have a roster of 20, right? And let's say realistically, maybe 10 kids play. So, you know, half the team, that doesn't mean that, you know, we don't trust you just because they didn't play. We're talking about the kids that are the constant troublemakers, the kids that are doing the wrong things. You know, that's the kids that we want to know that right away. And hopefully we're good enough as coaches to spot that. But especially nowadays where we don't have a lot of contact with you, like we are very trusting, you know, of your opinion. So I think keeping it 100 with us is something big.
And Matt, Annie touched on this. I don't think I heard you mention, do you enjoy getting emails from parents when it's recruiting?
No, absolutely not. That's a great question. I will 100% confirm that I know that there are parents emailing to me for their kid. And you can tell by language when you've talked to the kid multiple times and the parents are just having a different tone. No, we do not want to talk to the parents, especially when we're first getting to know. Typically in my kind of recruiting strategy, I like to talk to parents eventually, but I'm going to make a point to just talk to them with maybe without the kid there, because I want to get to know them. I want to know how their philosophies, what they're looking for their daughter, you know, what's important to them, because that's just important to us. We want to make them happy. You know, we want them to not want to transfer. That's a big thing. So on the first couple emails, please no. We will make a point to talk to you, but we want to get to know your daughter and make sure it's a good fit for us.
And let them write their own emails. I love that. Parents, I feel like I'm always giving you a hard time, telling you, trying to guide you in what to do, what not to do. Sometimes you need a little tough love. So here you have it from two college coaches. Let your athlete contact them, initiate that relationship, and eventually you'll get to know the coaches too. Okay, I want to talk about stats. So in volleyball, there are, I feel like, a million different ways to take stats now. I am super old school. I prefer paper. I know that that is like going out of style, but I enjoy it. I have my reasons. Once I find something that I can do mid-game as a head coach and track the things that I want to be able to track and see what I need to see in the moment, I'll switch. I'm not at that point though, but it's different for you guys. Can you tell me what sort of systems or programs or responsibilities related to stats, what do you guys use for your teams?
I'll touch upon this. So I'm glad you brought up the paper and pencil. I actually wrote an ABCA article. I don't know, Annie, was it maybe a month and a half ago, 2 months ago? I don't know. Whatever it was, but it was the whole idea of getting away from pencil and paper and using technology because it's faster. So my opinion is this. I think as coaches, it depends on what level you are at. So before I get into what we do, I think for like club and high school, I've had conversations with many coaches out there about what they do. And a lot of time, we just don't have a lot of staff to do a lot of stuff. So it is on, you know, the head coach maybe, or maybe you have an assistant that's able to take stats. But I think stats, especially when you have a small staff, have to be very purposeful. They have to serve a meaning on what you're trying to do. So for me, when I talk to high school coaches or club coaches, it's all about what stats are you taking during the game that are going to help you win that game. Some people like to take stats, say like, okay, you know, we missed 8 serves and we had 4 aces, blah, blah, blah. And you talk about it after the game. And that's great if that's your strategy. And I never want to tell a coach your strategy is great or your strategy is dumb, because that's just my opinion. I think for me, when I'm taking stats mid-game, it needs to serve a purpose for us to win. That's my personal opinion. I think if you are looking just to keep track of aces or errors, maybe if you can film the game, just watch that back after and maybe do it after. But I think stats should be quick and fast, whatever. And I think coaches need to be able to strategize and help their kids during points. So if your stat taking is taking away from that, it's really hard. So that's my 2 cents about that. I think it also, to answer what we use, I think for coaches out there, if you watch like a Big Ten game, Pac-12, SEC, whatever, you're going to see, you know, your head coach is probably standing up, maybe a couple assistants sitting at the front of the bench. And then you're going to see people with computers. You're going to see craziness. Like, there's Big Ten schools that have like 5 people on computers doing all this certain stuff. And that's what they usually is like a data volley for those people out there, that basically they are telling a story the whole match. They're pressing keys to basically represent a hit, set, bump. They're rating the pass, like where everything's going. It's a lot of math, different stuff like that. At SEMO, we don't have that big of a staff. It's 3 of us. So we are fighting for everything we have. Me personally, I actually made a kind of my own version of data volley in Excel, where I can keep track and code the live match to get answers we want. That helps us based on, we know what the tendencies of other teams are, what our tendencies are, who's hitting well, who's passing well. You know, it serves strategy purposes. But I think a lot of the time it's hard to do that and build it. I think actually I've spent probably close to 75 hours building this thing, and ridiculous amount, right? Like, I just, you know, during quarantine kind of went in on it. To me, stats tell a story. You know, I had this discussion with another coach today about, they are actually playing some matches in season, and they were talking about, you know, they were winning the serve pass battle in a couple of their games, but were losing matches, you know. So like, what was it about their match that they were trying to get better at? And I think stats are really useful because you can break down and figure out what you need to practice, right? So like, his team was really good at passing, but they just weren't executing on the first hit. So whether it be setting or whether it be first attack, and then figuring out the point scoring percentage based off that, I could totally nerd out. I could throw out a bunch of numbers at you. I think stats are just an awesome thing to utilize. But I think, we're talking to you, Whitney, you're saying like, you're kind of old school. I think there's a thing to that, right? Being old school, as we kind of feel like, what's the feeling? You know, if I put this kid in, the team might play better, right? Like, she might not have any better numbers than other girl that you have in, but, you know, maybe they just have a better connection. And sometimes coaching is just a gut feeling. And we have 10 people doing stats, right? But coaching's coaching and playing's playing. You know, unfortunately, stats have never won a game. We still have to go out and execute. So I love stats. I'm a big proponent of using technology while coaching, but whatever it is that you're doing, whatever you've got to do to win a set or a match, you go and do.
And I will include a link to your article, because I did see that, and that's awesome that you wrote it. So that will be in the show notes for everyone to go and read. And you made so many great points, and I'm going to try and break up with my pen and paper, but not yet.
Absolutely. It's tough, right? Like, I know it is. And you know, not everyone is capable of just having an iPad or a laptop laying around, let's be real. But, you know, whatever works for you, I'm a big proponent of, so you don't have to do math really quick. If someone's going to do math for me, I'm just going to do that.
Again, most of my audience is high school or middle school coaches. What are some top things? If you had to say like 3 or 4 big stats, I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but if you had three or four stats, what would you say is most important to the biggest population in that group?
For that audience, I think a lot of it is serve pass. You know, when we're young, we're trying to develop so many different skills. And, you know, we talk about it so much in our gym. And I know Annie's going to echo the same thing, is passing wins games. You know, it's very rare that a team is getting outpassed and losing matches. So understanding what that looks like, is this a good pass? And then from that, how many points are you winning when you're passing really well, right? So if you're making a lot of errors when the pass is really bad, well, maybe we got to get better at that. Or are we only killing the ball when the pass is really good? So maybe we got to practice uncomfortable situations in practice so we can get better at killing the ball when it's a bad pass. So I think recording your serve pass numbers is really important. Maybe one more I would say is maybe hitting percentage. I don't know if that's a good one, depending. And not for the reasons of, you know, we're trying to get a kid to hit 300, but I think to the point of understanding kids to not hit negative at a young age, right? And we're talking, we flirt with the idea of being conservative versus aggressive. They're like too aggressive, too conservative, right? But someone that is able to score points and is helping the team versus giving away too many points, I think is really big. So maybe you take that farther than just hitting percentage and maybe overall point scoring, something that you can value to the team. Like, hey, Sally, you did a great job. You scored 8 points, which is amazing in a set. But Sally, you gave up 10 points with hitting errors and service errors. Like, we can't win if you do that. So it's, I think maybe those would be something I'd recommend for a younger audience.
So maybe some sort of a stat sheet or stat program that allows coaches just to keep track of those few things and then relying on video to do the more in-depth analysis after the game.
For sure. And you can do, Excel is a great tool. You can use some formulas, you know, to say like, oh, she had 3 attempts and we rank on a 0 to 3 or 0 to 4 scale. Usually with 3, you can do it. But like, let's say 30, right? 30. And, you know, she had a total of, you know, a point scoring of 76. So 30 divided by 76. I mean, I could do that, I guess, in my head. But, you know, it's quicker to do it if Excel is going to do it for you. I always will recommend using Excel to do your math for you really quick.
Thank you. Because stats, I think, is people want to know a lot about it. And there's just so much information. And like you said, you know, we watch the games on TV and there's a row of 10 people on computers. And it's like, how am I supposed to do that? So it's very overwhelming. So thank you for pointing out that you really only need to track the things that are going to help you win the match, especially at the younger levels. I know that we're starting to run out of time. I have so many things that I want to talk to you guys about. But let's talk about the sideline. So what is it and how did it get started?
Yeah, so the sideline is Matt and I's little creation that just kind of randomly came about. I think back in May, we were just on a Zoom call with our friends and then it dwindled down to, I think, just Matt and I, which isn't, you know, super rare because we're best friends and we've worked together and, you know, we always just end up chatting about volleyball at all times. I think in any conversation that we have, it just gets circled back to volleyball and coaching. So we got very in depth, I think, about just different theories and different things that we were talking about. And I remember, I forget if it was myself or Matt, we were like, we should record this and like, maybe this is helpful for people. And then it just kind of randomly became a podcast and we had no idea how to be podcasters. Like, I still wouldn't even consider us podcasters. I just consider us coaches that are interviewing other coaches just for fun. I think the big root around the whole podcast is the fact that we both were grad assistants together at the same school doing the same things. Obviously, like, I had responsibilities and Matt had responsibilities that were slightly different, really not that different, but just random little things here and there. But once we left Averett, we went very different ways. We both stayed in the game. And Whitney, I know you talked about this earlier, about how there's so many paths, you know, to take with athletics. It's not just about going from a D3 program and going to be, you know, a D3 head coach. You don't have to take the same path as a person next to you. So I think that was really interesting that the two of us kind of had very different stories, but we both are connected in a way. So I was very curious to hear about other coaches' journeys due to the fact that, you know, I don't know if I mentioned it earlier. I definitely did in our podcast at one point, but I didn't really know that college coaching could be a full-time job. Like I said, I was in that business world and I was like, I think the highest you can be is like a high school coach. And, you know, maybe you are a teacher during the day or something, or you have a full-time job. That's kind of where I thought the extent of coaching went, which is naive of me to say, because obviously I played in college and I, you know, I had a coach that was there, but for 2 years he was part-time. So I didn't even know that that was a real full-time job that somebody could have until towards my third, fourth year of college. And then I was like, okay, this can actually be a thing. So the sideline, we have 19 episodes posted, I think at this point, and then we have like 22, I think, filmed. So it's all about coaches. It's, you know, you mentioned earlier, we had one head coach so far. And I kind of reached out to Kevin Hambley, not so much as a joke, but I was like, I love Stanford and I love Kevin Hambley. So when he answered me, I was like, hey, Matt, guess what? Like, it's not just about assistants anymore. Haha, like, we're going to let Kevin Hambley come on. And that was awesome. So that was, you know, that was a big one. And I think we're not super like strict on not having other head coaches come on. That was just kind of our theory in the beginning to have more assistants.
Well, what I really like about it, and this is something that I've always kind of believed as I've gone through my career, is that making connections with your peers, so like what you guys are doing by connecting with other assistants, that's probably going to help you more than making connections, you know, with someone high up. They might make some introductions and give you some good advice, but when you have a really broad network kind of at your own level, you're giving yourself a lot of potential opportunities in the future, because especially if you're choosing to associate with people who are ambitious and leaders, they're going to reach great lengths, you know, in their career. And if you're the person who, you know, connected with them back when they were an assistant, you have a different relationship with them than, you know, an assistant coach reaching out to the head coach of Stanford or something like that, you know? So I really like that about the sideline. Matt, did you have anything to add?
Yeah, I just want to add two things. So one thing I wanted to add about the recruiting, and I should have mentioned this earlier, is for club coaches or recruiting coordinators or athletes or anything, don't get in love with playing at a certain level. Say, I'm only going to be this kid. I've experienced so many times someone say, you know, she's a Division I kid and that's it. Or like, you know, she's Division II, so Annie, you can't recruit her. Sorry. Like, she's just not that level. No, I'm sorry. No, there are plenty of lower division teams that would be up on higher division teams. 100%. I've witnessed it. I've been a part of it. And also, you know, we're talking about culture, location. We're talking about the school, education. There's so much more than just a Division I, II, or III NAIA kid. Let your student athletes pick the program that they feel comfortable with, that it's going to challenge them. It's going to give them a great education. There's so much more than just, oh, she's a Division I. And that's coming from a Division I coach. And even it too, like I've heard it so many times of, oh, like she's power five, so you can't recruit her. Like, no, I want that kid. I'm gonna try, right? Until she tells me no, like, we're gonna try. So that's my biggest advice is coaches, please, 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 please stop putting it in your athlete's head about where you think they should go and be more proactive about telling them about great places, you know, where they can get a quality education, where they can be their own person and encourage them to look out than just two schools, right? There's so many schools out there that can be great fits for them. So please help your student athlete and stop limiting the amount of schools that they should be going to. So that's my number one. My second one I did want to talk about was for coaches out there, especially if coaches that have been coaching for a while, please take the time to try and learn something new. So like have someone coach you on something and see how challenging it is for you to try and make adjustments and learn something. So the other night I was with some friends and including one of our softball coaches, and I wanted to learn how to pitch a softball because I had never done it before. So he taught me how to pitch a softball. It was challenging. I was not good at it. And so I can see why when I teach something to a kid, like it's not always going to work on the first time. So I want to challenge all coaches out there to learn something new and see how challenging it is. Be coached so that you're coachable, and so that when you have the next chance to talk with an athlete, you can understand why it takes a little longer. Okay. That's my two cents.
I love it. My husband is a tennis and pickleball professional, and I played tennis in high school, but I was never really taught like the right way to do it. And anytime we even try to play together, he's just like, oh, you need to just hold it a little bit different. And I try and it doesn't work. So I totally understand. And I agree. Go out, experience being coached and see what that experience is like, and keep that in mind when you're working with your kids. So we're going to wrap up here, but I wanted to ask you again. I highly recommend The Sideline. I think it's an awesome podcast and I've enjoyed the episodes that I've listened to. I wanted to know from both of you, what is sort of a lesson that you've learned both from a coach that you've worked with directly, like in person, and then maybe something that you learned through the podcast from one of the coaches that you interviewed?
Well, first of all, I've worked for two head coaches now who are so different and so great. I've had a great experience with both of them. So the advice that I'm going to share, or a lesson, I guess, from Coach McShay, who's my current boss, the head coach at Stevens, last season, you know, she was like, genuinely do not sweat the little things. I was kind of, as an assistant, getting kind of worked up. You know, I'd come off being a grad assistant with Matt, where there was two of us to do a fair share of the job. And then it kind of, you know, switched directly to just me. So I think I was really just stressing myself out with things that did not need to be that crazy in my mind. She said to me too, she's like, you're not always going to please everybody. It's just inevitable. You know, for me, I like to be a people pleaser and I'm kind of a perfectionist with some things that I do. So it's kind of hard to, you know, if something doesn't work out the way that you plan, to not overanalyze it and stress yourself out and like not go to bed at night. She's like, you need to sleep. You need to just calm down and come to work the next day and it'll all be figured out. And that has been the most like stress relieving thing for me since I started at Stevens, just because if something doesn't go the way that I imagined or I think, I'm just like, okay, what can I control and what can I not control? And that kind of always echoes in my mind. And that's been really, really helpful for me. So that's that. And then to your second part of the question, we've had a lot of really awesome guests. And as I said, like Kevin Hambley, I think he could have said like, volleyball is cool. And I'm like, great advice. Amazing. I love him. But this advice actually comes from Megan from UCLA, because she was really, really helpful, I think, with my career now. So she gave some advice that I think is very relevant and present to me. So one thing that she said, she's like, as an assistant, I go to my head coach. If I have a problem or if there's a problem that got presented to me, I will go with the question and with a couple solutions. So, you know, she'll go up and she'll be like, so-and-so, this happened. Here's what I was thinking. What do you think? Rather than just going with a problem and then being like, how do you want to solve this? I think the best part about being an assistant is you're able to have your own opinion and your own mind. And your head coach has hired you because they want to hear that. It's not just about, you know, them, especially with Coach McShay. Like, she's so willing and open to hear my thoughts that now I'm excited to like move forward in the future. And I'm not excited to have like problems with my team or anything else, but I am excited to be able to help her with some solutions that maybe last year I was less willing to give my own feedback, if that makes sense.
I actually have something kind of similar to that of Annie. Something that I've always struggled with is taking time for myself. Like, I wish I could show my calendar, because my calendar is always busy and it's always with volleyball. Like, I will literally throw volleyball from 12 to 12. It's seriously, I'm not even kidding. And it was hard. It's hard for me to take a step back and just relax and enjoy something else. Like, it really is difficult for me. And, you know, I think this whole year with having to quarantine, the pandemic, like, it's really showed me it's okay to take time for yourself. And so I think I give a lot of credit to the Dovo at Marquette, Jess Savy. She's a really good friend, and I can just talk to her now about stuff outside of volleyball. Like, I can just chat with her now, especially since I don't work with her. It's super easy for us to just talk, and it helps me, I think, to remind myself, like, there's life outside of volleyball. So I'm sure there are club coaches that are listening to this that they're obsessed with volleyball also, and there is stuff that you can enjoy. And I hope I hope there is someone that is like me out there that does that. Like, trust me, it makes a world of difference. Even if it's 2 hours in 1 week where you just stop what you're doing and just enjoy something else, just take the time. It means the world. You know, I think your kids can really tell when you're run down and stressed about stuff. They want you at your best. They want to have fun. They want all that. So self-care is really important. So make sure you do that. Something I learned from the podcast, I think, is very general, but it's no matter where you are, we all coach the same sport. It doesn't matter your background, where you come from, if you played professionally or if you coached Power Five school, it really doesn't matter. We're here for the student athletes. We're here to make their lives better. And, you know, it's just such a cool job. So I know that's kind of a blanket answer and probably not super cool like Annie's was, but I'm just really thankful for every guest that we've had and for people like you, Whitney, that are helping so many, you know, coaches out there that, you know, are progressing our game. You know, so many times I'm like, man, this kid has such bad habits, you know, coming into college. I'm like, unfortunately, there was one time there was a coach that said, yeah, that looks really good. And it really doesn't. So the more, you know, we can educate coaches and more we can educate student athletes and parents about volleyball in general, it's only going to make our game better. And, you know, hopefully that promotes a new generation of winning gold medals. I'm knocking on wood that we can win some gold medals in volleyball and take back the throne and do all that. But once again, I just want to say, Whitney, thank you so much. Like, what you're doing is awesome. And, you know, I can speak for Annie. I know we're so happy and thrilled to be a part of your podcast and share kind of some of our knowledge and wisdom.
Well, I think it's going to help so many coaches. I've probably already said that, but that is, you know, a big mission of Get the Pancake is just to make this, you know, when you're talking about stats, maybe that's simple to you, but to even to me, some of the things you were saying, I'm like, oh, I never really thought about it that way. And I'm over a decade into coaching. And so these coaches who are coming in and have only a season or two of experience, they probably haven't thought of that if I haven't. And so I really appreciate that you guys came on to share your knowledge as simple or as basic as you thought it was. It really wasn't. I think that this has been an incredible chat, and actually I got a lot out of it too. Before we hear how to find you, like how to find the podcast and like Instagram or social media, is there any advice that you can give to coaches who are just starting out?
I think the biggest thing is just to never lose sight of who you are and what your why is. I think that's just huge. At the end of the day, you know, just remember why you're a coach. And I think everything else can just kind of fall into place. There's really no science to it. We're all getting better at all times. Even like the top coach in the country or who you think is the top coach in the country, they're still learning. And they're still learning things from high school coaches, from middle school coaches, from club coaches. And that was very apparent when we talked to someone like Kevin Hambley. He even said, he's like, I'm still a student of the game. And you would kind of think at maybe a smaller level or a younger level that this person has it all figured out. So just stop comparing yourself to people and just take your own route and figure out your own process.
Annie said it so well. I was going to echo that. I was going to say initially is do not be afraid to reach out to anyone. Like I said, I take the time to read every single recruiting email. If any coach out there wants to email me and ask questions, I would love it. I will gladly take 15 to 20 minutes to write out an email of some suggestions. Like, trust me, I will have the time. I know Annie will have the time. Anyone you ask should have the time. And if someone's not willing to help you, that's okay. Don't worry about it. You know, ask someone else, because I know there's a lot of people out in the volleyball community that want to help. It doesn't matter if they're a high school coach, middle school coach, different stuff like that. I think Annie said it well. There are high school coaches that I know that are better coaches than I am, and I am looking at what they're doing. I can't tell you any single volleyball drill that is posted online, whether it seems minute or whatever it is, I am clicking on it, see if I like it or not, to see maybe I can do something. But my biggest thing is, yeah, don't be afraid to ask and just be creative. You know, there is not a science. I guess there is kind of a science behind some of it. All right, I should take it back. I think of volleyball coaching as like an art. There's not a great way to do it all the time. Sometimes you got to just throw something together and see if it works. Don't be afraid to just say, it didn't work. Let's try something different. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've run a practice and said, okay, this isn't it. So just try, just ask and just try random stuff and see what you like, see what doesn't work. And don't be afraid to just see what happens.
So I think kind of putting together what both of you said is another, I guess, to add on top of that is that we all need to keep learning as well. The game is always changing. You know, even if we feel like we've got it all figured out or we're feeling pretty competent, maybe there's a rules change next year or there's a new strategy or new techniques. Like, I just recently learned some new jumping techniques and I feel like I've never done a proper volleyball approach before now that I'm trying to change my approach. But there's always things that we can be learning. Like Annie said, be yourself in your coaching. Don't doubt yourself. That was all great advice that you just gave there at the end. And you gave such good information. It was so valuable throughout the podcast. So if people want to listen to the podcast, how do they find you? And then how do they connect with you guys on social?
Podcast-wise, we only have Instagram at the Sideline Podcast. And that's really just for our like social media side of it. So you'll be able to see advice from each coach if they send it in. And then in terms of finding the actual podcast, it's on Apple and Spotify. And you can just type in the Sideline and it should come up. For me, my handle on social media, I guess, is at Annie_Deloitte. That is my personal, which I'm fine if people follow me on it and want to DM questions or whatever. Also, you know, we'll both take questions to the Sideline as well for the Instagram. My email is adeloyd@stevens.edu.
Yeah. And just to add, mine is for Instagram @CoachMattSouls. Twitter is @CoachMattSouls. Email is not @CoachMattSouls. It is mstoles@cmo.edu. But feel free to DM the Sideline Podcast. First off, I just want to say Annie does an incredible job on Instagram. So please make sure you follow. She is awesome.
I love the podcast. I love the Instagram. You guys may not consider yourselves professionals yet, but I see a lot of promise in your podcast. And I hope, you know, once seasons really get back into the full swing of things, that you guys are able to maintain that podcast, because I think it's providing so much value. And I highly encourage everyone to go and listen to it. I will include a link, especially to that first episode. I think we got to know you a lot through this podcast episode, but your own podcast episode number one, I think that's a great introduction to your guys' background and kind of what your goals are with the show. This has been an incredible episode, and I'm really thrilled that you guys came on to the show. So Annie and Matt, thank you so much for being on the Get the Pancake Podcast.
Thank you so much, Whitney.
Thank you. It was so much fun.